Support for The Front Porch comes from WVCarFinder.com, matching West Virginia cars to West Virginians who want to buy them. It's a service of the Charleston Gazette-Mail. More at WVCarFinder.com. And you're on The Front Porch. It's Scott Finn, Executive Director of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, here with Rick Wilson and Lori Lynn, and we are talking about what happens next. We are waiting for Trump to become president. We are looking at Jim Justice as our new governor, and we're going to talk about what it means today to coal, to Obamacare, to the Supreme Court, to lots of things. Let's get right to it. Let's open up with what this means for things that you're interested in. Lori, you talked about what President Trump means for a Supreme Court.
Well, first of all, it means that Antonin Scalia's seat, he was one of the most conservative justices, obviously, will now be filled by a Trump appointee, and Trump has a list of 20 or so names that he's committed, he says, to picking one of those names. Assuming he does that, that's, I think, a very good thing. And we will probably have at least one more Supreme Court vacancy in his term. So again, you know, this time last week, we were preparing for a very liberal shift in the court, and now it's going to go the other way. So I think that'll be very consequential.
So I have a question for Lori. I know you're very committed to the rule of law and things like that. And seems to me like concern with constitutional niceties, due process, rule of law might not be Trump's strong suit. How do you think that's going to play out?
That is definitely the concern, and that will be what people on the left and the right are watching. He's going to be the president, you know. I think we have to give him a chance. That's really the only thing we can do. But I will say this, you're going to see a press and a Democratic Party that is all of a sudden very, very interested in, you know, limiting the power of the executive. And we haven't seen that in the past 8 years. So that will be a little bit refreshing.
Turnabout is a fair play,
indeed.
I guess. And you're talking about other things with the Supreme Court, too, that you're worried the Supreme Court was going to go down the line of allowing more of this presidential authority, for example.
Sure. The administrative state. I mean, Merrick Garland, Obama's nominee, who was not confirmed and will now not be confirmed, is very big on the administrative state. Rubber stamps virtually any regulation. I think Trump's nominee will be different. Again, assuming he sticks to that list and doesn't appoint his horse or, you know, somebody outside of it.
That's what Caligula did. Appointed his horse to the Senate, I believe, in Rome.
You got the reference.
Yeah, I'm a classics geek, yeah.
So West Virginia went for Trump in a huge way, 68% support here, one of the largest margins in the country. Well, what does this mean for West Virginia? Rick, one of the things that it looks like Trump and the Republican Congress will be able to do now is repeal Obamacare. Repeal and replace is sort of the mantra. Actually, Trump has a plan for what he wants to do in the first 100 days. And although it's not very specific, he talks about repealing Obamacare and replacing it with health savings accounts and allowing people to buy insurance across state lines. What do you think that's going to do for West Virginia?
Well, you know, in West Virginia, 175,000 or more people have gained health coverage since 2014. These are mostly working families, not eligible for Medicaid because they have disability or something like that. So, and maybe another 30-some thousand have gained health care through the exchange. And then there's a bunch of young people who are on their parents' policies. So, I mean, are they really going to take away health care from 200-some thousand West Virginians?
That's the question, Lori. Are they?
I have no idea. It seems unthinkable. But if you repeal Obamacare, you repeal Obamacare. If you really do it wholesale, then that would be what happens. I will say this about HSAs. I think HSAs are great. You hear a lot of complaints about, you know, from liberals about, oh, well, you know, if you're basically spending your own money on healthcare, it disincentivizes you to go get care. You know what also disincentivizes you to get care? Deductibles that are, you know, $6,000 and $7,000, which is what we're seeing with some of these plans on the exchanges. People have seen deductibles just skyrocket. And with a deductible, you are paying for, you know, the first whatever the deductible is of care. So I think it's kind of the same thing. And to me, the complaint about the HSAs rings a little hollow.
Do you think, Rick, that Obamacare is being hurt by the fact that because of all the compromises, the public option was never on the table? It's not really, you know, a state plan like you have in Canada. And so it's not satisfying to anybody. Liberals don't like it because it doesn't go far enough. And conservatives don't like the government intervention in the state.
I do think the Medicaid expansion has worked really well. I mean, that's one unfortunate thing, in my opinion, the Supreme Court did, was make it a state option. And if you look where they haven't done it, and if you look for places where history is kind of interesting, you'll find there's a big significance between states that have not expanded Medicaid and states that have. So that, to me, is a big success of the program. It'll be interesting to see if 20 million people get their care taken away. The other thing is health savings accounts. You know, I think the best way to do coverage is like to spread the risk over a large pool in a social insurance model instead of a health savings account on you. Because, you know, I'm a runner. I've done triathlons and marathons. I wound up finding out 12 years ago my heart basically was dead. You know, I had to have bypass surgery and all that, which explains why I was getting slower and slower when I ran. So it made my self-esteem go up. But anyway.
But you can do both. I mean, you can have pools for things like heart surgery, but you can have health savings accounts for things like taking your kids to the doctor for a cold or preventative care.
I do wonder, the thing about selling insurance across state lines could really help West Virginia. We're a small state, we're a poor state. If those lines go away, then we're part of a bigger pool. There's some interesting ideas in there. Of course, the other really big idea is doing away with the Clean Power Plan, which is just a given. That's not going to happen now. Whether or not, or to what extent that's going to help the coal industry, we've talked about this. Maybe just stop the bleeding, or will the, as Rick tweeted earlier, is the coal now going to grow back?
It started already, didn't it?
I mean, I don't know. But then again, you wouldn't think that the coal industry would be so excited about it if it wasn't going to have some positive effect to take these regulations off the table.
I think that's right. I think, you know, they know more than we do about the mechanics of it. It also isn't just the Clean Power Plan. It's the Waters of the United States rule, a bunch of other things that the EPA, and not even just the EPA, he's talking about lifting all kinds of regulations related to the energy industry. So yeah, Clean Power Plan is big, but there's a lot more than that.
Podcast listeners, I want you to stick around, and we're going to have more about what Trump means for West Virginia and also more about Jim Justice.
This yes. year, there's going to be huge news all year around, and this is why you're going to need.
This year is going to be a huge news year all along. You think the election's over, but the fun's just starting. You know, I have to say that I'm not supposed to have opinions about who wins and loses elections. And politically, I don't. But professionally, I have very strong opinions. And let me just say, the professional in me is really excited about a President Trump and a Governor Justice. I think that both are colorful people that are going to generate tons and tons of great stories.
And here's a quote for you, Scott, attributed to Chairman Mao, which says, everything under heaven is in utter chaos. The situation is excellent.
Yes, exactly. That's how the reporter thinks. And so keep up to date on all of it, West Virginia Public Broadcasting, online, on TV, and of course on the radio and on podcasts like The Front Porch. Thanks. Okay, and we're going to keep talking a little bit more about Trump, and then we're going to circle back and talk about Jim Justice, who will be our new governor. So, Rick, you were talking about earlier about if the shoe was on the other foot, how would this person's supporters be reacting? What do you mean by that?
Well, not just the supporters, but the candidate himself, who said that he may or may not accept the results of the election, that the system was rigged. And I wonder, had it been reversed and had Trump lost the popular vote by over 200,000, would he have said, golly, I really don't like this, but in the spirit of fair play, that's how the cookie crumbles. Good game, guys. Do you think that would have happened?
Well, it's funny how the Democrats were so excited about the Electoral College when they thought they had a firewall, and now they think it's a bad idea.
Yeah, so what do you think, Rex? Should we get rid of the Electoral College?
I mean, I think it is kind of an anachronism. One thing about the Electoral College is it sort of limits your ability to influence policy based on where you live. So if you live in a, say, God forbid, Laura, you're living in Vermont, you know, and it's a presidential election and you wanted to vote for someone, your vote wouldn't really count.
Well, you know whose votes get amplified in this system in general? Swing states, sure, but also smaller states, more rural states. And this is a great example of it. So Hillary Clinton is racking up the vote in California as we speak. It's not even all counted yet. I heard an estimate that she might be ahead by as much as one percentage point after all the California votes finally come in. And yet she's going to lose very decisively in the Electoral College. Rural people in places like Michigan, Ohio, they've really had an outsized influence on the election.
question is, do we assign votes by real estate or by person? You know.
Well, I mean, you have to look at the flip side of it too, though. If you look at your home state of Iowa, Scott, I would argue, and I think you probably agree, that it gets a disproportionate amount of attention because it's the first in the nation primary. On the other hand, if it was just, you know, straight popular vote, would anyone even visit Iowa? No, they would be in California, New York, Florida. They would be where in the cities where the people are. And you know, there would be absolutely no incentive for them to go to any rural place. There are no votes there.
I mean, a primary would be one thing. You could still have a primary at the state level and then a general where every vote counts equally.
I'm having a very strange feeling about this election. I'm trying to think of the right word. Rick, is there a German word for this? It is the pleasure in other people finally feeling your pain. It's a very specific form of Schadenfreude. It's like,
I think you're,
it's a very specific
more
form
subtle,
of Schadenfreude.
Yeah.
It's like the liberal coastal elites, especially in the media, who treat us, you know, flyover country people like we're this strange, often like racist, you know, people that you just write off. We all should leave here and just move to the big cities and get jobs there, I guess, is their economic plan for the heartland. They're finally having to reckon with the, you know, the power of people's votes here. And it's nice to be noticed.
Yeah, I mean, I try not to go on Facebook around election time, but I was on it this morning to post a picture and just the meltdowns from, you know, I have most of my friends are from my school background, which was very East Coast kind of elite professionals, and just the foot stomping, the condescension, almost every post is itself an example of why Trump won, because people have friends who they went to high school with who see those face on those posts on their Facebook and say, well, good grief, you don't get me at all.
That goes back to the pulsating middle finger, yeah, which has been the subtext this whole year. Right?
People wanted things blown up, and you know, I think they've fairly well succeeded. We'll see. But then again, the establishment types are already trying to reassert themselves within the Trump administration and otherwise.
Oh, there are plenty of establishment types in the Republican Party as well. And I think you'll see a real attempt to get in there and co-opt the Trump thing. You would have seen that even if he had lost. Now that he's won, you're going to see it in spades.
So I didn't read it yet, but George Will, there's an interesting column today. Did you read it?
Yeah, I think it was, if it's the one I'm thinking of, it's, he was basically saying, be careful what you wish for. The Republican Party has kind of attached itself to a dying demographic, and you know, that's not going to be good down the line.
You know, the thing that I find concerning in general, and we'll see if we back away from this, is that this election divided racial groups from one another as never before and how they voted, you know, economic groups by education. You know, there were a lot of calls on both sides, you know, to your tribe and tribalism instead of ideology or ideas. And I hope we back away from that.
You know, there's a book that was written back in the 90s that I think about a lot by Benjamin Barber, Lori. It's titled Jihad versus McWorld.
Yeah.
And its basic premise is that there's two things going on in the all over the world. One, we're becoming more tribal. And the other is there's this sort of heartless, soulless globalization going on that chops up everything and commodifies everything and erodes tradition. And You know, jihad is not Muslim jihad. It means any kind of tribalism that people do. And the thing is, he thought if either one of them won, we're all going to lose. You know, tribal war.
What's the anecdote to that?
He recommends democracy. Jury's still out on that one.
Yeah, on an identity stuff, I think you're right, Scott. But, you know, again, it is in a big way the left that has cultivated this idea that, you know, you are your race, you are your gender, and you should vote that way. And you can't say that and expect white men not to hear it. I mean, I get that it's different. I get the argument about white privilege, but it wasn't the right that wanted to make everything about race initially.
No, it was the left that started it, and it's Donald Trump that's exploited it very deftly in this election.
Well, there was the whole Southern strategy thing, though, that was talked about after the Civil Rights Movement. There's this whole alienated white demographic in the South that used to be reliable Democratic voters, and let's do it. And then it was followed by sort of more or less subtle racial dog whistling that went on until, as David Friesen, who was on there, has gone from a dog whistle to a siren lately. So the racialization of the Republican Party is going to be an interesting thing to look at. It's basically kind of branded itself as a white people's party.
Well, you know, it's funny because I think it's actually been, how can I say it? There's been a tug of war within the Republican Party about that, to what degree, because they do benefit from white racial resentment. But there's been people that have tried their best to tamp it down, to be inclusive. You think of the Jack Kemps of the world. And so, you know, which way to go? And it's up to Trump now, basically, to show which way he wants to take the party, because he is indisputably the leader of this party now. I want to ask another question, a different question, about Jim Justice, another billionaire. He has a much different disposition, though. And if anything, he's been less specific about his plans for the state than Trump has about his plans for the country. So I just wonder, what do you expect to see from him, and how successful do you think he's going to be in implementing some of these plans of his?
Well, first of all, the plans, we don't know what his plans are. But yeah, I think that is the big question. I think Republicans are really waiting to see, is this guy really a Democrat, or is he actually going to govern more like a maybe moderate Republican and really work with us? I mean, if the Senate had gone the other way, if the Democrats had gotten the Senate back, I think Justice's situation would be a little different. But right now, if you're Jim Justice, you're not going to get anything done unless you work pretty closely with the Republican legislature.
Rick, do you see, as someone representing the left side of things, do you see some hope in Jim Justice being the governor? So the Republicans pretty much swept everything else this year in West Virginia.
I mean, I think there's some wisdom in the whole separation of power thing, and it sort of checks and balances. So I think that's one thing. Here's an exercise in empathy that I think it's interesting. What would you do were you in the other person's shoes? You know, like you're talking about the future of the Republican Party. If I were sitting at the wheels, I would really try to cultivate sort of a, you know, great nation in big tent where you encourage and welcome other people and you have diversity and stuff like that. If I would have been a leader from 2014 on, I would have probably not gone pedal to the metal on divisive issues and try to bring people together and say we can work through this. If I would have been them.
But it didn't hurt them, right?
Would have been Obama? You mean?
Too soon to tell. It could be good.
It certainly didn't hurt them in this election. I mean, I thought that was the big story, you know, remember in November, and I didn't see that really bearing any fruit whatsoever.
I see what you mean.
Mostly in the governor's race.
You're saying they might have won the governor's race if they hadn't been so divisive. I don't know. I think it's really more about personalities, frankly.
Yeah.
I think people just liked Jim Justice and, believed him when he said that he was not beholden to the Democratic Party at the national level. But we shall see what happens. I think that's the big question. The Republicans have big majorities now in the state Senate and in the House. And so they're completely in charge at the legislative level. What sort of agenda do you think the Senate and the House Republicans are going to set? And then what sort of agenda will Justice try to set? How will a billionaire businessman, react to having to work with the legislature? These are all things that none of us can answer. We'll just have to wait and see. Is there anything else that either one of you wanted to talk about?
Just an observation that there are two things that can cause suffering. One is not getting what you want, and the other is getting it.
Yeah, I love this thing. So let's walk through. There was some commentary when the Republicans were a little bit more worried about Trump. Now they're coming on board about how Trump winning could be the worst thing that could possibly happen to the Republican Party, in that if he screws things up, or even if he really doesn't, we're due for a recession pretty soon, no matter who's in power.
There's not a black guy to blame everything on either, you know?
I mean, so that's a question, Lori. Do you think that the Republicans could have lost in the long term by winning with Trump?
Well, I mean, the long term is sort of I've stopped thinking about the long term. I mean, there are no permanent victories in politics, right? I mean, 8 years ago, Nancy Pelosi was set to become Speaker of the House. Democrats had both houses of Congress. Obama was the newly elected president. And fast forward 8 years from now, complete reversal. You know, Obama won. He passed Obamacare. But now the Republicans are going to win. And, you know, are they going to screw it up? Of course they're going to screw up. You always screw it up in some sense because, you know, you're not always going to be the majority. But you're going to be able to have power while you have it, get done what you can get done while you have that power. And I think you'll see a lot happen really quickly.
It's a very Buddhist sort of way of looking at power.
But
isn't
you,
it? Like
but it has to be, right?
You think you own it and you don't.
You're never. There is no permanent majority. You know, there will be a Democratic president one day. There will be a Democratic Congress. You just, you know, while you have a chance, you got to do the best that you can. What I worry about a little bit is that the Republicans aren't ready. I mean, just because people didn't really expect it, there's going to be a whole heck of a lot to do, you know, between now and inauguration and then in the spring.
So it kind of reminds me of what John Maynard Keynes said, in the long run, we're all dead.
Yeah.
All right. I'll throw in one last thing. I asked on Twitter what we should talk about today, and we have a reply here from, I'm going to say your name wrong, I'm sorry, Lisi Wiley. She says, talk about the push for Manypenny to be Secretary of West Virginia DEP, plus Justice's conflict of interests. Manypenny was the guy who was a delegate who ran unsuccessfully for Congress. And I guess there's talk, I mean, among this Twitter user, about him being DEP chief. I'd be surprised. I'll just leave it at that. But what about Justice's conflicts of interest, Lori?
Yeah, if I were to give him one piece of advice, I mean, this is genuinely heartfelt. Find somebody to be your ethics czar, to really get in there and police all the different conflicts of interest you're going to have. I mean, this is the richest man in the state. He owns a ton of companies. He owns a very visible resort, the Greenbrier, which has gotten some, you know, sort
state
of interesting
money.
State money in interesting ways. It, not only Justice himself, I'm not so worried about him personally, but there are going to be a lot of people around him, both in government and in his companies, that just have some really weird incentives going on.
You could say the same thing about Trump, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
And in a very similar way, I think that one of the solutions is turning these businesses over to your kids to run. But that doesn't really solve the conflict
of interest. It doesn't
really.
I mean, you know, it's hard to set up a real firewall when it's your kids running the company and you're having Christmas and Thanksgiving with them. I mean, it is a landmines everywhere. And I think if he's not careful, we're going to be consumed with that on the front page of the paper in pretty short order.
You know,
so.
Journalists call that a target-rich environment. Well, you know, it's just a little, I think it's a good piece of advice, and hopefully someone's listening.
Lawyer up.
That's right. Hey, and speaking of, so you were gone for the last couple of weeks. So how is Trump ready? You're part of the Trump transition agriculture team.
Yeah.
Under Chris Christie.
Heirloom tomatoes, right? And
yeah,
weed.
Heirloom tomatoes. And we were talking about, you know, milk is not meth, so we're going to really open up the whole goat cheese market. From the liberal elites,
you know, that has nothing to do with your personal interests at all. That
absolutely
was just
not
public interest.
Talk about
on
ethics.
Principle, yeah.
Especially, there should be a tariff probably on imported
any,
goat cheese,
and also you know, we need to break the elite cow monopoly too.
Big
you
know? Cow,
yeah, big cow needs to go down. Drain the cow swamp.
So, Rick, what's your Bible verse of the day?
You know, it depends on whether you want to be, you know, bright or dark on it. You know.
So
dark one, if we're going like worst case scenario, you know, there's a Buddhist story that works even better than a Bible verse here. No offense.
Wait, dark and Buddhist, really?
Well, first noble truth, life is suffering, right? Which, you know, mm-hmm. has not been refuted this week. There's a story about this poor farm, and they had one horse, and the horse ran away, and everyone said, oh, that's really bad. And the father said, maybe so, maybe not. And then the horse came back with six mares. Oh, you're lucky now, you're wealthy. Well, it could be good, could be bad. And then the son was riding the horse and broke his leg. Oh, what a tragic thing. And then they came back conscripting troops to the army, and his son couldn't go because he had a broken leg. They took everybody else. He healed, and they said, oh, that's good. So the whole point of that sort of Buddha story is you can't tell in a short time frame whether something is to be celebrated or not.
So you can lose by winning and win by losing.
You can win by losing, yeah. And then there, to go dark on the Bible, this is just apropos of nothing, okay? This is King James Bible. There is a way that seemeth right unto a man, but the end thereof are the ways of death. That's a little bright thought for the day. So, apropos of nothing.
Any songs to go out on this week? Any suggestions? It's the end of the world as we know it.
That would be a good one. Yeah, R.E.M.
We'll get the R.E.M. Xander's going to get the R.E.M. from the Mountain Stage. We actually have the rights to that. All right, and that's what we're going to do. We're going to go out on It's the End of the World as We Know It. That could be good. Trump supporters, don't get angry at me. It could be a good thing.
The next line is, and I feel fine.
I feel fine. And that's the front porch for this week. Rick Wilson, Lori Lynn. appreciate you listening. Take care.
It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world as we know it.